Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another good edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Elogi. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so this is for December 20th, 2025, the show before Christmas. And honestly, if there really is like any theme that we had this week, it was shocking violence, really. We had two different mass shootings happen on both sides of the world. One happened right here in the U.S. at Brown University in Rhode Island, and the other happened at Bondi Beach in Australia. Both of these sort of tell a very strange tale because, for one thing, Australia, this was like their first major mass shooting in like 30-something years. Whereas here in the U.S., the Brown shooting was just like, it's like the one we've had in like, what, a month? And also just like the, once again, the crazy amount of like, you know, conflicting media accounts and, you know, law enforcement not really having their shit together and everything. But on top of all of that, we also ended up losing one of the great actors and filmmakers in American history and his wife, and we lost both of them in just the worst way possible. And then, of course, on top of all of that, we also started having the Justice Department giving out more of the Epstein files, and what do you know? A lot of them are just completely blacked out. Like, just 100 pages of nothing but completely blacked out, you know, nothing. Like, you could close your eyes, and that's basically what it looks like. So, yeah, it just, the week in general, it just kind of sucks. So we're going to try and make it just slightly a little better. And the way we're going to start with that is, as we always do, as is tradition, we're going to talk about all the stuff we've been doing up to this point this week. And it's also as tradition, we start with Chris. So, Chris, tell us what you've been doing this week.
Yeah, I've been busy with working, all that. We had a good like couple days here, and kind of melted a lot of the small bits of snow, layers and such. Obviously, not the big piles that you would see.
Oh yeah.
But then the next day it snowed again. Luckily, not too much. Maybe an inch or so. That already kind of mostly started to melt today, so
yep.
Nothing really too bad there, but been you know, getting ready for the holiday and stuff. Watched The Great Flood, new thing on Netflix. It's a Korean movie featuring the main character's buddy from Squid Game. He is sort of a major character in this, but it features a woman who, as it starts off with, is, you know, living with her son at this big apartment complex as the rain's been coming in, and it kind of ends up flooding, and you start finding that, you know, like the second floor is flooded up to the third floor where she and her kid are at, and at that point they start getting notified that, you know, evacuations need to happen. You need to get up to the roof, I guess, for whatever evacuation thing they need to do. And sort of in the process, she runs into problems, crowding and all that, and doing all that kind of stuff. And then you, then she runs into this guy, the guy from Squid Games, which introduces himself as like the company that she works for. They're developing, there's like a motion engine thing for the big AI thing, and tells them that, you know, this meteor has hit in Antarctica, has caused this flooding, especially like a surge of salt water into this area that you would normally expect And sort of seeing like tsunamis coming in and all that kind of stuff. Get to safety and get her out because she's important to the company and potentially to saving humanity. And then it starts going into some wild places from there as you start learning more about what's going on here and all that. And let's say you get a little bit of Groundhog Day in there, as well as some of the Matrix and a few other things. It's a pretty neat idea for a thing. And yeah, once you get to the end, it's kind of a little more ambiguous of what really happened there. So yeah, I'm curious to see sort of what the what people take away from it. But yeah, it's a pretty interesting movie if you like your sort of disaster stuff, sci-fi, kind of interesting twist stuff going on here. So yeah, that's one we're checking out on Netflix. And yeah, with the big death of the deaths of the week, I was like, I haven't really seen many of Rob Reiner's movies. I've seen The Princess Bride a good bit.
Yeah, but that, like, that's the one everybody's seen.
Yeah, although I watched it recently and I was like, never really noticed who the grandfather was. I hadn't really
Yeah,
seen the last couple
recently.
years, so I was
Yeah.
like, oh, that's him. Okay, that's interesting, especially because he's still doing all the Columbo-isms, since that's just him. Pay attention to the story. So yeah, I watched the first three films that he did. This is Spinal Tap, which I've learned a lot of what's in is through osmosis, because the Simpsons and other things have spoofed it or directly referenced it and all that. That's a really, movie slash documentary about this fake band.
Yeah, also slash spot the guy who's going to be a future star. 'Cause, like, there's a lot of them in there.
Yeah, it's a really interesting movie because it's about this band that became a big rock band, but also at the point that they're at, they're sort of them about to be irrelevant because they're putting out this album that has a very sexist cover, and they're very confused by that. Like, well, this band did that, and it's like, well, that's them getting treated like a dog and not a woman. I guess in hindsight, also that Sabrina Carpenter's most recent album is probably spoofing that album cover because she is very much in the same pose and all that. Interesting there. And yeah, you get a lot of the reference, power, their equipment goes to 11, other speakers and all that. Despite that being a very dumb thing. Yeah, and then touring and finding a lot of their stops getting canceled and having to figure out like what's going on with this and where that's going. And like Fran Drescher's in this in a more subdued role, her voice to be the thing. And yeah, you've got like an early Dana Carvey in this. He's a mime waiter. Who else is on this list here?
Billy Crystal.
Yeah, Ed Begley Jr. Who else? You got Paul Schaefer is in here. Angelica Houston. Fred Willard. Yeah, I really liked his part. He's like, oh, I'm a big fan, but not of the band, but of the whole rock milieu thing. Where you could tell the guys are like, oh, okay, we got somebody cool here, and then a lot of fun stuff. There, so that was a fun one to watch. I forget where that was on. The annoying thing of like looking at the movies to watch is that a lot of them aren't on any one service or anything. Some of them aren't even on any service. That one I think was on Peacock, because I think they got the second movie as well on there, and I haven't watched that one yet. I watched The Sure Thing, which is not on any service. You can find an upload on YouTube for that, and that is a good movie, but it's also, at least watching it, It's a very standard kind of rom-com where the two main people that are, you know, are going to fall in love are very annoyed at each other and find each other very grating because they are to themselves. And I assume this is one of John Cusack's
Oh yeah.
here, kind of a know-it-all guy who's trying to find the way it starts because he's at this party and he's talking to these women and he's like talking about space stuff that none of them give a shit about as he's trying to hit on them and then none of that works out. But Daphne Zuniga is the love interest, you know, from Spaceballs and all that. So as I see her from so that was a fun one. Go some places and you see some definitely some notable actors here. So people I may not necessarily know their names of, because like the guy who's driving the truck is a guy that's it is Larry Hankin, is a character actor who's in a ton of stuff, you know. Yeah, he's the butler in Billy Madison, as well as a bunch of other things. But and then I watched Stand By Me for various parts of that. And that has a heck of a for being a movie full of kids. It's got, you know, Wil Wheaton, who go on to be a big deal. River Phoenix, who was a big
Sadly
deal,
passed
but
away.
passed away sort of very early in his career. Corey Feldman, who became a big deal for a while, for maybe like.
Well, I mean, he was already kind of a star because he'd been in the Goonies at that point.
Yeah. Well, I think I was filmed like right around the same time. Then Jerry O'Connell is probably like the kid amongst these that grew up the most. Because they play him off as like, oh, he's the fat kid, but they play him off like that. And it's like, oh yeah, this is based on a Stan Lee or a Stephen King book.
Well, short story, but
Yeah.
yeah. And I mean the short story is basically it's the same story. It's a bunch of kids going in the 50s, going on a trip to try and find a dead body.
Yeah. They hear about this from Jerry O'Connell's older brother, that he's hiding under the deck for some reason, and hears about this. It's basically just a movie about the journey. Not really anything in particular or anything really, but yeah, seeing like Kiefer Sutherland, a young Kiefer Sutherland who plays a good, you know, dirtbag.
Oh yeah. 'Cause every Stephen King story has at least one of them.
Yeah.
In fact, if you look very closely, you can see basically all the archetypes in your average Stephen King story in that one movie.
Yeah. And you have John Cusack as the older brother for the Wil Wheaton kid, who's, you know, filmed this, you know, a year or two after The Sure Thing and managed to somehow look way older than he does in that movie. And yeah, that kind of just goes, and they have the ultimate confrontation as the boys finally reach the dead kid, and the older brother shows up with his gang. And you see the gun come into play, having seen it, you know, earlier in the movie. They have a there's a pretty funny scene when they're going to bed and they take turns guarding the others from wolves, foxes, whatever they're afraid of. And I think Jerry O'Connell's character is very much constantly afraid, as they just have him constantly like jerking the gun around, thinking it something's coming from every direction, even if all you're hearing is frogs or something like that. That's a fun one too. But I started looking at the other movies there, and like one's on Prime, others are not really on anything, and it's like, all right, this is, I guess, the end of watching any of this stuff. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been watching there. So some good stuff there. And for games I've been playing a good bit of Sektori as I've been finishing up Game of the Year stuff and getting back into that and trying to actually get better at the game. So I was reading up on things people were talking about and trying to figure out more of the mechanics, because I was playing it and being like, I'm kind of doing about the same, at least on the runs where I'm getting further in. And then being like, well, what the heck is this thing called, a strike combo? And I found people talking about it, and it's like, okay, that makes sense. So the strike is like any of the shoulder buttons you can push for this, that is essentially like a dash move that you dash into, enemies or whatever, and you get a little explosion around you that clears out enemies or whatever that are nearby. And the strike combo essentially is you want to do that at the tokens that you have spawned. Because once you do that, it builds up the combo, which gets you more points. And two, you refill the strike with it again. So that makes it something you don't want to just waste by doing it into enemies, because then you just have to wait for 10 seconds for it to reload. So you're just kind of doing these strikes, getting your combo up. And at a certain point, I was kind of getting the hang of this, building up my upgrades, because you're using on the upgrade tokens you're getting, as well as some of the other tokens, and kind of just filling up the list of upgrades you can take. Just have it kind of going up and then cycling back around. In a way, it's like, oh, I was too busy doing the strike. Should have hit X to use it on something, to upgrade something. So I was kind of messing around there, but started getting the hang of that, and that really starts getting the scores going, where I managed to upgrade my high score from 1.5 million to 1.7. Still not really making more progress, but doing kind of being more efficient with the way I'm playing. And so kind of doing all that has been pretty good. Now I'm just trying to put together some good runs and kind of increase the score a good bit. So that's been what I've been working on in Sectori. And the other game I'm playing more of is Rocket League. The season ended. Finished up some of the things I needed to do there. Got my got enough of the currency to unlock the next battle pass. I started playing some of that, and then as Fortnite is doing Harry Potter stuff for this season, Rocket League has a little bit of that. Their Frosty Fest, which is their holiday event, I saw the post like yesterday or today that that has started, and part of that is you're supposed to pick one of the houses to start working on things. And I'm like, boy, I do not give a shit about it and don't want to get any of that, but that's gonna, 'cause I think it gets you skins tied to each of the houses. I think they have the hat as well, the sorting hat. But I think the rest of the items are all just generic holiday stuff. Looks like you can get a soup a snowman topper. What else? Like a little like hot chocolate. Another one that's some like a headband with reindeer antlers on it. Some wheels with as like the classic barrel with booze in it kind of thing. For skiing. So yeah, with Rocket League and pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I've been playing Axiom Verge 2, 'cause I realized recently that I had not actually played that game completely. I picked at it a little bit for a little while and just ended up moving on to other stuff. And since we're kinda in the holiday era sort of thing where there's a bunch of new games coming out, but I don't have the money to buy them, I decided, it's time to use my PS Plus subscription and go back and see if I can pick at some stuff I never got around to playing, or I did play but I never finished, that kind of thing. So Axiom Verge 2 it was. And of course I have played and I did finish the original Axiom Verge, which was an incredible game in and of itself. But Axiom Verge is essentially, it takes a lot of the same ideas that the first game did, but sort of does it differently. For one thing, that game is more of a shooter mechanically. Axiom Verge 2 is more based around melee combat because you're primary weapon is either like a pickaxe or something like a pickaxe, stuff like that. You do technically have a projectile weapon, which is the boomerangs, but the boomerangs are kind of clunky compared to what you can do with that. And of course, also, you have the eventually get the ability to transform into a little sentient bug robot called Damu, who has his little buzzsaw on a string attack, which is just really neat.
And a whole separate map.
Yeah, and a whole separate map too, because the whole thing with Axiom Verge 2 is this whole thing of like dimension hopping, where like in the first Axiom Verge there was this whole thing about like manipulating the area around you with the device you get that lets you like go through like weird, glitchy panels and stuff like that. Whereas in Axiom Verge 2 there's a lot of like hopping in and out of portals into like different dimensional rifts and stuff. And that in and of itself like gets increased upon because later on eventually it gets to the point where it's like, okay, you're trying to find these, now you're trying to find them that are like hidden in places, and then eventually it gets to the point where you can like actually like get to a place where you can attract them to you and it'll transfer you over to the specific, different realm of that particular area. And like later on in the game, there's like a lot of that where you're sort of having to manipulate the portal around to get to the area you need to go. Yeah, so there's that, and there's also, like I mentioned, the whole Damu mechanic. So, because he's a tiny little robot, it means that you got to get into like smaller areas and stuff. There's also like a bunch of enemies that are like really, really big, but the game doesn't really have like bosses the same way that Axiom Verge does. Because with Axiom Verge, you would encounter a boss, but you'd have to go through like a midway boss room before then. The bosses in Axiom Verge 2, like some of them are definitely there, but they're more of kind of like an optional thing.
Yeah, you're not locked into a room.
Yeah, there are like bosses that you absolutely do have to, but they're actually in the minority compared to most of them.
I think it's nice that, like, if you just accidentally stumble upon a boss, you're just like, oh shit, I didn't mean to do this. You could just.
Yep. Yeah. So there is that, and also, like the as you find out, the game is like a prequel to the original Axiom Verge. And like the connections between the two are a little esoteric if you don't if you hadn't played the original Axiom Verge already. Because like parts of it don't really hint at it unless you're you know enough. If you can pick out like the graphical similarities, the parts, like the machinery, you'll come across like those egg-shaped machines from the first Axiom Verge. You'll come across some of them. And then eventually, you're playing this character in Idira, and the end, like the literally the credit sequence actually reveals who she is in the original Axiom Verge. But I won't spoil that, but so yeah, I finished that last night, and yeah, damn, if that game is not really awesome. I will say though, much like with the first Axiom Verge, there are a lot of instances where it's like, okay, I'm literally just trying to fill out the grid on this map here to figure out where it is I need to go next.
Yeah.
But still a lot of fun. And I'm also still playing Path of Exile as well. I did get to play a bit of Path of Exile 2 last weekend when because they were doing their free weekend. That ended, so now I've got to play the first one again, which isn't a problem because the first game is still really good. Definitely a better Diablo game than what Diablo has been putting out recently. Yeah, so yeah, I've been playing that and it's still a lot of fun. And it's just again, like when you're starting that game off, you don't r really realize like how underpowered you are until you start getting to like a little further on in the earlier parts of the game, especially when you start encountering like the boss characters, where the first boss or two that you encounter in the game really easy to die to, and it doesn't really matter what your class is. It's simply because at that point you're kind of still trying to suss out, like, okay, I need to learn how to dodge. I need to how, this guy kind of telegraphs his attacks. I need to figure out how I can escape them, that kind of thing. But still, just a really solid Diablo clone all around. But other than that, that's basically what I've been playing this week. Other than that, just books, my usual reading, nothing new there really. And also it's friggin' cold, dude. Although weirdly enough, it like bounced up very briefly into like the low 60s for like a day or two down here. Like really, really briefly. Like it was more like fall weather. And then it just like it drooped back down like really, really quickly. It's crazy. Winter down here in Georgia is like, it's really unpredictable. It can be freezing cold for a few days, and then suddenly it's like spring or early autumn weather very briefly. It's crazy. But anyway, that's what I've been doing. So, Chris, you got anything you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
All right. Well, in that case, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, I wanted to sort of talk about riots. Now, riots are typically what is a riot? A riot is basically an enormous, spontaneous, acts of violence by a large group or mob, where usually they just start lashing out at a bunch of people. Riots typically, your average riot is typically started because of just a lot of reasons. Usually it's out of grievance or like out of dissent. Usually stuff just is just sort of boiling underneath the surface, and usually there's just some random event that happens that finally just makes it finally boil over. Usually we think about things like, there's the US, for example, has a long, unfortunate history of race riots that have happened. We've had riots like 1934, when the Teamsters armed themselves with pipes and baseball bats and started clashing with the cops in Minneapolis in 1934. There's like, police riots. There's the infamous hard hat riot that happened. And all that stuff. Like usually there's some sort of like social thing that's happening underneath it that finally just cause it to explode. And sometimes somebody's sports team loses and or they win and people just go freaking crazy. Like that happens here in the US all the damn time too. The team wins, wins the Super Bowl, or they win the World Series, and suddenly a bunch of white college kids are hanging off of light posts and turning over police cars. Or maybe they lose the Super Bowl, or they lose the World Series, and once again a bunch of white college kids are hanging off of lampposts and turning over police cars. And weirdly enough, that kind of thing is like as old as civilization itself. The Byzantine Empire under Justinian the First notoriously had the Nika riots, which was this thing where like sports teams based around like chariot racing would start like rioting if any of their teams lost, or they'd start getting into politics and all of that. All of that stuff, at the very least, it's like, okay, there's tension happening, stuff's gonna boil over. You may not want it to happen, but there's also a bit of you that expects that it might. But that's not the type of riot we're talking about this week. And funny enough, Chris, guess what? This happened in your neck of the woods. I'm talking about the 1974 10 Cent Beer Night riot that happened at Cleveland Stadium. You may or may not have heard about this one.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so a little bit of backstory here. Like I said, Cleveland Stadium, Cleveland, Ohio, which was, I believe, and still is, I believe, the home base for the Cleveland Indians, or whatever it is they call themselves now.
Guardians.
Yeah, the Cleveland Guardians. And in 1974, they got a offer from a beer company named Stroh's. Stroh's Beer, which is where it was. They haven't existed for 25 years. They were actually from Detroit, which is what makes this even weirder, because no Detroit team was playing. They were actually playing against the Texas Rangers that at this point. They said, "Hey, we want to promote our beer." And so the folks who own Cleveland Stadium were like, "Cool. We shall promote your beer. What shall we do to promote your beer?" And so they had the grand idea. Hey, how about on June 4th, 1974, the beer that you can get in Cleveland Stadium will cost only 10 cents each. Now, if you do the math, that's about somewhere close to like 64 to 65 cents in 2025 money. And comparatively would be a huge discount to what it regularly was back then, which was 65 cents, which was about a little over $4 in today's money. And they had one rule, which was you could only buy six beers per purchase. But, and here's where the problem was, there was no limit on the number of purchases that you could make during the game. So, you can already think, yeah, this is gonna cause problems, isn't it? Because the thing is, Stroh's beer wasn't exactly like a strong beer. It was like let me see, I want to like, yeah, it was only like 4.5% per volume, so not a whole lot. But keep in mind that because of the low prices, that meant people were pounding them down like, but with both hands. And again, only cost 10 cents, so you could basically get absolutely smashed by just spending a little over a dollar. Now, that's part of it. There's another thing that also has to happen. See, a few days before this happened, the Cleveland Indians had played the Rangers over at Arlington Stadium in Texas. And during that time, there was something, a thing that kind of happens occasionally in baseball, what they call a bench clearing brawl, which is where most or all of the players on both teams just decide to leave the dugout and just go on there and just wail the crap out of each other. Weirdly enough, this is not the first or the last time that the Texas Rangers would be involved in such an incident. I'm going to sort of quote from Wikipedia here. The trouble at Arlington began in the bottom of the fourth inning with a walk to the Rangers' Tom Grieve, followed by a Lenny Randle single. The next batter hit what should have been a double play ball to Indians third baseman John Lowenstein. Lowenstein stepped on third base to retire Grieve and threw the ball to second base for the second out, but Randle disrupted the play with a hard slide into second baseman Jack Bruner. Started next on the bottom of the eighth when pitcher Milt Wilcox threw behind Randle's legs. Then on the next pitch, he laid down a drag bunt. When Wilcox fielded the ball and approached Randle to tack him out, Randle intentionally veered inside the baseline towards Wilcox and hit him with his forearm before continuing to first base. That, of course, then resulted in their first baseman, John Ellis, intercepting and punching Randle before he reached the base. And then everybody got out of the bleachers and started just beating the ever-loving hell out of each other. Weirdly enough, however, the game was not suspended or forfeited. No players from either team were ejected, and the Rangers won 3-0. So, as you can imagine, there was bad blood with this, and on top of that, there was drunkenness. So, there was no way that this was not going to cause a problem. As the game started, the increasingly inebriated crowd grew more and more unruly. Early in the game, Cleveland's Leron Lee hit a line drive into the stomach of Rangers pitcher Ferguson Jenkins, after which Jenkins dropped to the ground. Fans in the upper deck of the stadium cheered, then chanted, hit him again, harder, harder. A woman ran on out to the Indians on deck circle, flashed herself, and then tried to kiss the umpire, who was, quote, not in a kissing mood. As Greve hit his second home run of the game, a naked man sprinted to second base and slid in, probably getting dirt in places unsuitable for speculation, in the words of one sports writer. One inning later, a father and son pair ran onto the field and mooned the bands and the bleachers. They also brought firecrackers. They started pelting players with hot dogs, spat at them. One guy even nearly got hit by an empty gallon jug of Thunderbird wine, which, don't know if you've ever seen one of those things. They're big, they're heavy, and they hurt. At one point, the Rangers argued a call in which Lee was called safe in a close play at third base, spiking Jenkins with his cleats in the process and forcing him to leave the game. By the seventh inning, families and those fans who remained sober had already left the ballpark, and the remaining crowd became increasingly intoxicated and belligerent. By this point, the fans were getting increasingly even more rowdy because, turns out, because of that 10-0 beer promotion, their beer supply was actually running dry, and it was getting so bad that they actually had to fill them directly from company trucks from Stroh's Beer themselves. Eventually, they started refilling by industrial spigot, and then at the bottom of the ninth, the game tied at 5-5. And at that point, the whole situation finally boiled over. Fans started climbing out of the bleachers onto the field. They started charging, fighting with the players. Literally, like the players themselves, both teams were now actively having to fight fans off. At one point, Jeff Burrows, who was an outfielder for the Rangers, had a 19-year-old fan named Terry Yerkek run up to him to try and steal his hat. At that point, the Rangers manager and the players thought he was being attacked, and then they ran out onto the field with their bats. And then a large number of intoxicated fans, some armed with, and I'm not kidding, knives, chains, clubs fashioned from portions of stadium seats that they had torn apart, surged onto the field, and others hurled bottles from the stands. 200 fans surrounded the 25 Texas Rangers, with more fans coming. At that point, the Cleveland manager Kim Aspromonte ordered his players to grab bats and help the Rangers. So, funny enough, these two teams who had just had bad blood between them ended up having to join forces just to fight the crazy out-of-control fans. Eventually, the teams had to flee to their clubhouses and closed and locked the doors. I think they might have actually barricaded them at one point, too. The crowd then went onto the field and basically tore it to shreds. They stole the bases from the infield. They threw cups, rocks, bottles, batteries from radios, hot dogs, popcorn containers, and folding chairs out onto the field. The game was forfeited to Texas by the call of the chief umpire at that point. And unfortunately, he was also a victim of the riots because he got struck in the head with part of a stadium seat, and his hand was cut by a thrown rock. The rioting kept going for like 20 minutes, and the whole thing was like, because remember, this was like a game that was being played like with, radio announcers. So this whole thing was also like happening over the radio, and the two, radio announcers at that point, Joe Tate and Herb Score, were basically describing the whole thing live on the radio. Eventually, the Cleveland Division of Police finally arrived to restore order. Nine fans were arrested. Indians players escorted the Rangers to the team bus. One of the local sports writers for the Chronicle Telegram, Dan Coolen, attempted to interview fans but was punched in the face twice. though he collected later recollected that the drunken punches were so weak he was barely affected by them. So yeah, that sort of became like one of the most notorious instances of like a really bad idea leading to an explosion of violence in the history of American sports. Now, for the record, they actually did try to do this again the following month on July 18th, which had no problems. They did not actually have a problem this time, and the reason was they did do the 10 cents per cup thing. But you could only buy 2 cups per person at the reduced price, and the game was being guarded by 200 armed police officers at the ballpark. And yeah, so that is the 10-cent beer night riot of 1974. Chris, you're a Clevelander. Did I miss anything?
Not really, no.
All right, and that is yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
I would say if you want to learn more about beer involved legacy in Cleveland, look up Bottlegate. Goes to the NFL.
All right. So with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first major assholes of the week are the Justice Department, who finally started releasing the files it has on Jeffrey Epstein, and almost all of them were completely redacted.
Yeah, there's they're not even releasing everything yet because I
Nope.
assume they haven't redacted things for all of this, so they're breaking the law that's already been passed. They're supposed to release everything with but have not, so they say they'll release it over time. But yeah, you have mainly they're saying like, oh, political people are also part of the stuff that's getting redacted or blacked out here, and that mainly means Trump for this. So Bill Clinton specific a lot of these, so much so that there's let's say an image here with him and Michael Jackson and his and Michael Jackson's kids. Has nothing to do with Epstein. It's literally just a press photo that they decided to put in there to make it look worse than it is. So the gist here that these are not a reliable source here. That seems to be the case. And also shit about Bill Clinton, except for Hillary and the old Democrats. Otherwise, I think everybody our age has been like, who gives a shit about that? And relevant for a long time at this point. And it's like, oh wait, you're saying the guy who got impeached for the Monica Lewinsky thing might be a sleazeball? Wow, that's awful. So yeah, like the grand jury testimony thing is all blacked out, so just get out of that. There's some other things that aren't fully redacted, but also censored there. So, yeah, the House Democrats that were part of that committee released a bunch of photos they had, which are not redacted. So, you get a lot of photos there of that featuring Trump. Though I think there is one photo actually that Trump is in, but it's a check. Big giant check that he signed. You can clearly see. All right. There's something there. I didn't get everything. Too much else to add, but yeah.
So I think at this point we can just very safely say, yeah, he's guilty as sin.
Yeah, because you don't redact this much and come away with it like, oh, Trump's, completely in the clear. Because why would you?
Exactly. So yeah, we got that happened, and then on top of that, we ended up having just a spurt of violence that happened again on both sides of the world. The first one, well, actually, I think these both happened like roughly around the same time period, coincidentally. First, we'll talk about what happened in Australia, Bondi Beach. There was a popular Hanukkah celebration that was happening, made up mostly of Jewish clientele. And during that, these two men, one father and son, took some, I think, bolt action rifles, and they ended up shooting and killing 15 people.
I don't know if there's a number for injured. I didn't see it readily in this, but yeah, there were hundreds of people there, and these two managed to cause a lot of chaos and kill many people here. The father was killed, the son was shot and wounded, so he'll be the rest of his life for that. And yeah, the unfortunate thing is that the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is trying to tie this into pro-Palestinian protests, and wants to put a moratorium on protests for 3 months, and among other things here, to do to tie that into all of that, which is positive thing is they are looking to toughen up their gun laws even more. Boy, that would be nice to see.
So famously, Australia instituted a zero tolerance gun control policy after the Port Arthur massacre in 1996, when a young gentleman by the name of Martin Bryant went and killed 35 people. And this is significant because this is the first mass shooting that Australia has, like, of this scope that Australia has had in like 30 years. So, it's very significant, and the fact that they had to rely on like bolt action rifles instead of like machine guns is kind of what is standing out. What also needs to be stood out is that so the perpetrators of these were these two gentlemen who were you'll usually hear people's like, well, the perpetrators were Muslims, which is true. They were apparently radicalized after they went to a trip to Pakistan, something of that era, of that. But what they won't tell you is that the son was in fact disarmed by a Muslim gentleman himself, a gentleman by the name of Ahmed Al-Ahmad, who was a retired police officer and a Syrian refugee, who stepped in, managed to disarm him, even suffered some injuries in the process, but he managed to save a lot of lives. So, and then, coincidentally, around the same time, a shooting happened at Brown University in Rhode Island, where two people were killed, nine were m wounded. The same person who was responsible for it killed a person at MIT before being found dead days later in a storage facility. The guy who and the thing was like the unfortunately, once again, the authorities and the media completely flubbed this one because they ended up bringing in a person of interest who was not involved at all. They kept sort of going around saying, no, we got the guy, no, the guy's still at large, no, we got the guy, no, he's still at large. And then finally, they sort of tracked his social media stuff and were able to finally find the guy, but by then he was already dead.
Which then it starts to how he's dead. And yeah, went on a hell of a trip, because Brown University is in Rhode Island, MIT obviously in Boston, and then was in a New Hampshire storage facility. Not a huge distance between these three locations, but still a good distance, especially when it seemed like the cops had no clue after the first. Yeah, they locked down the campus and all that, and he seemed to just get away. There's no real confirmation or anything that, like, oh, they knew who did it, were looking into this. They just seemed to be searching. But yeah, as no, this person was a migrant, the shooter, who let me see, came from here. Yeah, he came in from
Portugal.
Portugal.
Yeah, he's Portuguese.
Yeah, he was on a student visa from about 2000 to 2001.
Yeah.
And then sort of won through the lottery thing that was set up during Trump's first term. Obtained legal permanent resident status through that in September 2017. So, yeah. And his last known residence, I guess, was in Miami. So, went on a more of a trip to go up to here. Start these, but yeah. What were you going to say?
I was gonna say it's hilarious because when, there was like all like and unfortunately this this has become like common courtesy. Every time there's a mass shooting, there's always people immediately like like the blood isn't even dry yet. They'll immediately start talking about it was Muslim terrorists, immigrants, blah 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 blah. And then everybody found out that this guy was from Portugal.
Yeah.
And then they all found out that wait, Portugal isn't in South America. It's real. It's right next to Spain.
Yeah.
It's literally the Iberian Peninsula. They don't even speak Spanish.
Yeah. Like essentially somebody that you leak school.
Yeah.
So not exactly the freeloading migrants that's I don't know if they've really found anything to explain why. But yeah, I assume we'll see if anything comes of that. But yeah, just three people dead. That's kind of the end of it.
Yeah. So yeah, that happened. And then while all of this was going on, President Donald J. Trump has established a blockade of sanctioned oil tankers going to visit Venezuela. So we're like that one step closer to actively invading Venezuela.
Yeah, so much so that Trump decided to have some sort of press conference thing. Tuesday or Wednesday, I forget which day. Shows how much I paid attention to it. Where people are like, oh, he's going to announce we're going to war against Venezuela. And he didn't really do that. He just whined about a bunch of stuff. Whined about the Epstein stuff, saying it's the Democrats wanting all that. Try to blame as much as he could on the Democrats and nobody's really believing any of that. We did announce the weird 1776 dollar whatever warrior payment thing to military people, and people found out that's taxable income, so they're not even going to get that much of that. So he's on a run. So there you go for that stuff.
Yeah, we got that. And then we got this bit of bullshit because this was especially infuriating. So in the House of Representatives, the Dems managed to get four Republicans to sign their discharge petition to get the House to vote on extending ACA subsidies. But as it was going on, like as like one of the voters was like one of the representatives was like on their way to like cast their vote. Like literally in the middle of it, Speaker Mike Johnson decides to put the House on recess until 2026.
Yeah.
So in the thing literally ended up losing like 204 to 203. And it's like, yeah, he's lost control of the House completely at
Yeah.
this point, and he's literally just running away.
Yeah, they got the 218 they needed for this. But then he yeah, flanked by his caucus on the Capitol steps, House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries demanded that he allow a vote on a 3-year extension of ACA subsidies before they leave for the holidays. Not tomorrow, not. And Johnson refused, saying it will be on the floor that first week of January, when it will obviously be too late for deal with their sign up the ACA stuff, and we'll have to deal with the increased payment for keeping that going for the time being. But yeah, basically just saying like, oh, we're done for the year. Have fun. We'll be back next year, kind of thing. And it's like, yeah. So much so he got interviewed, and somebody asked if he lost control of the house. Yeah, sure. Trying to convince everybody for that, so now people can see that Republicans very much are the reason we don't have this extension. Mad about the shutdown, the way that that ended. It's like clear that the Republicans agree to any of that at all. So that'll just be a fight that continues to harm them throughout 2026 as the various elections. More pain for them that they don't seem to want to do the right thing and at least try to repair their image. They just don't seem to care, which is something they can campaign on. So there you go.
And sort of put the cherry on top of the shit sundae at the very end. The Kennedy Center has officially been renamed to the Donald Trump and John F. Kennedy Center, named to the building that was a memorial for JFK.
Which is illegal because it needs to be approved by Congress for any sort of name change stuff. But yeah, they put Donald the sign where it says the John F. Kennedy Memorial Center for the Performing Arts, which is a weird thing that he would want to put his name on this because he does not give a shit about the performing arts in any way. Just other than the Kennedy Center honors tends to be something that is, an actual honor for comedians, actors, anybody that wins those things. So yeah, this just thing he's just gonna get his name on all these buildings as quick, and hopefully the Democrats weigh it all down. So yeah, there you go.
So that was the incredible amount of assholes of the week, though unfortunately it will not be the end of the assholes we'll be talking about for this week's show, but we'll get to that because fortunately it wasn't all terrible. Some good things did happen this week, specifically our hero of the week, Anthony Joshua, who beat the crap out of Jake Paul so bad that he ended up getting a double jaw fracture.
This is part of the Netflix boxing event that happened on Friday night. Yeah, Anthony Joshua is, a former heavyweight champion, a guy with actual skill and not just a prankster that has fought, a bunch of nobodies, and old people that he can easily beat. He fought an actual guy who knew what to do and even said so ahead of the fight. Steal his soul and destroy him, and ended up doing that in the sixth round. Got a good combo in, just landed a huge hit on his jaw, and he went down kind of stunned. Yeah, went to the hospital afterwards and has two fractures in his jaw. And tried to joke, double broken jaw, give me Canelo in 10 days, so to fight again. So that thing, but hey, got to ruin his Christmas because he's not going to be able to have to subsist on like. So yeah, that's gonna be something that's going to harm his chance getting any more big fights unless he's just eat shit like this. Yeah, good to see. And also kind of related, Andrew Tate also got his ass beat in a boxing match. Seemed to be in like a minor boxing league, but got beat by a guy that's was like a former football player doing boxing.
And keep in mind, Andrew Tate is a was a career kickboxer, and he still got his ass completely beat. Like
Yeah.
it is so wonderful.
And by a guy that was basically doing like Looney Tunes uppercut punches. If you watch some of the video footage that's out there, it's like this guy not exactly in any way, but still managed to get some great shots on him as it started to knock him out. A good day for seeing faces caved in.
Unfortunately, we now have to go on to the show proper, and we have to start it with, of course, the horrible news we learned this week. Again, the great actor and filmmaker Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle Singer were found murdered, stabbed to death in their homes, and the primary suspect is their son, Nick Reiner.
Unfortunately, that just was awful to see. And you could see the sort of legacy that Rob Reiner had the people that came to, speak of him's death were, a lot of the people that's been in his films, that has worked with him, been friends with him. Obama spoke, Obama and Michelle spoke nicely of him, because they, I guess, we're going to be visiting them that evening. But this happened before that, so they died. Fairly good ages, though. Is Carl Reiner still alive?
I
Is he
think he
still
is.
kicking? Still kicking like his buddy, Mel Brooks? Yeah, 98.
Yep.
It's got to be awful for him as well to see his son and daughter-in-law passing like
Yeah.
that, being at 98. And yeah, they still have two other kids as well that, well, technically three. I think they adopted one. At least I think so from what I was reading. Oh, yeah, one was adopted from his marriage with Penny Marshall. So yeah, kids that, lost their parents at the hands of their brother. Also an awful thing to see. But yeah, Rob Reiner probably could easily say one of the best directors of all time. You look at his movies that he put out, like, has about as good of a start to that as any director has ever had. Let's see, 84, This is Spinal Tap. 85, The Sure Thing. 86, Stand By Me. 87, The Princess Bride. 89, When Harry Met Sally. 1990, Misery. 92, A Few Good Men. You get 94 is North, which is a pretty decent movie. And 95 is The American President. Boy, that's about an 11-year stretch full of movies that became iconic pop culture movies. You could know the lines from the iconic lines from these movies without having seen them. You can have various quotes from Princess Bride. You want to see a dead body from Stand By Me. Turn It to 11 from Spinal Tap. You get the diner scene from When Harry Met Sally. That's iconic. It's just like there's not many directors that have that kind of start. A director of so many amazing movies. And the stuff after that, a lot of decent stuff. Nothing that reaches the level of those ones, but still great things to see him. And yeah, he did a lot of acting in shows and was in at least a couple of his movies. Especially This is Spinal Tap, because he plays the director of the documentary for that. Yeah, just seemed like a genuinely nice person, as you see when you see the way that so many people had nice things to say about him, even people like James Woods. We were like, God, that guy's a piece of shit, but even he was not a fan of what Trump said. And it was just like, you might disagree with these people, but they're don't and like you don't deserve to be treated like that in death when you've not deserved it.
We might as well move on to that too, because President Trump decided to poke his ass into it, and he basically said something that pissed off everybody. Like, it pissed off the people who already didn't like him. It pissed off most of the people in his base. It pissed off both sides of the aisle. In fact, the only people that weren't pissed off were like the hardest of hardcore in his cult, and even they tried to
Yeah.
play it off as just a joke, but
His Truth Social post had, "Oh, don't do this. What are you doing?" kind of thing. Yeah, so his post here was, "A very sad thing happened last night in Hollywood. Rob Reiner, a tortured and struggling but once very talented movie director and comedy star, has passed away, together with his wife Michelle, reportedly due to the anger he caused others through his massive, unyielding, and incurable affliction with a mind-crippling disease known as Trump Derangement Syndrome, sometimes referred to as TD." He was known to have driven people crazy by his raging obsession of President Donald J. Trump. With his obvious paranoia reaching new heights as the Trump administration surpassed all goals and expectations of greatness, and with the golden age of America upon us, perhaps like never before, may Robin Michelle rest in peace. And it's like, boy, you took a tragic thing and made it about yourself. And like, that's bad enough. Much less talking shit about two people that really nobody has any negatives to say. They, Robin Michelle very much supported, marriage equality. They did a lot of charity work and use their wealth to support lots of good and all that. And that's why they are fairly popular amongst all political made great movies. And nothing that's really had a huge let's say political bent to it other than just good people and a lot of that. So yeah, it just ended up being an awful situation, and Trump decided to make it even worse and show that sort of theater they put up in the wake of Charlie Kirk's death was just theater, at least for Trump. It makes you realize what that was about wasn't necessarily the general public's, liking Charlie Kirk, because most of them didn't know who the hell he was
Yeah,
before he died. It was more
exactly.
seeing people talking shit about somebody who supposedly was, a Christian or whatever, talking about somebody that died in such a horrific way. And it's like, I get that to a degree. But much like when Trump dies, there's going to be celebration in the streets. Because, not because it's the right thing to do, it's because he has toured for the last 10 years. And well before that, but mostly in the last 10 years. And that much like when he lost, and incredibly happy to see him dead.
And it's gonna happen any day now.
And he just had another cognitive test where he had to recite animals.
So yeah, we're gonna move on from there to some other stuff related to the administration, namely, Deputy Director of the FBI Dan Bongino will be stepping down in January because he sucks at his job.
Yeah, and I think Trump even weirdly commented on this and said he thinks he wants to go back to his show. A job with much less consequences to his work. And so he can continue spreading conspiracies without, having a responsibility to be a reasonable person. Because that's not what he is. So yeah, good riddance to somebody who's wholly unqualified for that position. But I'm sure they'll find somebody else to throw in there.
So yeah, that is happening. And it then to also talk about people who are deciding not to go further in politics, House Representative Elise Stefanik is suspending her New York mayoral campaign and is announcing that she's not going to be seeking re-election.
Which is a little surprising, not for the governor thing, because she was never going to do anything. But not seeking re-election to Congress for somebody who had extremely high aspirations when Trump won again, that she was going to, rise up to be a big figure in the GOP, and that never really panning out. She wanted to be the House Speaker and maybe get to the Senate, if not to, the presidency at some point. But none of that panned out because she's an asshole, and seems like even Republicans don't really like her. So there you go. Especially at a bad mayoral campaign, I didn't really pay too much attention to it, but I did see somebody responding to her or commenting on her outfits for this one her outfit where you're like, wait, what? How did anybody in her camp let her out of the house looking like this? Yeah, I'm gonna see if I can find this image. Yeah, let me see here. Almost got it. Let's see. Oh yeah, here it is. I want you to look at this, at the text. Let's weekend thing. Read the text and then look at her and see the whole image.
Okay. All right. It says, I'm going to say this sincerely and honestly without rancor or politics. Seriously. Elise Stefanik should talk to the stylist who Marjorie Taylor Greene somewhat recently hired. Whatever this is could be campaign ending. Wow.
Like, her top is fine.
Yeah.
But then you notice what's going on with her pants, and
Yeah.
nobody hemmed them or anything. It just looks like
Nope.
when you get, fresh jeans that are too long for you, and you're like, boy, do I look like, but you're not running for
Yep.
governor. So, yeah. It just looks like pants that are ridiculous. So, yeah, fun times. Good riddance to her. Hopefully we never see her again.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, that's happening, and now we got this bullshit, 'cause on top of all the other crap, President Trump has plaques under the portraits on his presidential wall of fame, basically shitting on all of them, including President Biden and Obama.
Yeah.
And if he's not shitting on them, he's trying to find some tenuous connection to himself.
Yeah, I mean, Biden's literally starts with Sleepy Joe Biden, who was by far the worst president in American history, which is like saying that, and you yourself are probably Obama's calls him a divisive president and all that. Not really worth focusing on this stuff, but just shows how petty he is for all this. So I believe the Biden one also talks shit about him, but maybe not. Oh yeah, it ends. In 2016, President Clinton's wife Hillary lost the presidency to President Donald. So gets into it there. So yeah, more petty bullshit from him. Again, something else that when a Democrat wins in 2028, they can just throw this all in the trash. Well, there you go.
All right. Then we found out this week that TikTok has officially signed a deal to spin off their U.S. operations with investors, including Oracle, Silver Lake, and MGX.
Got Oracle, run by, one of the richest people in the world. Silver Lake is Jared Kushner's thing. MGX might be something you don't know. That is a state-owned entity from primarily invested in, AI and tech stuff. But is also going to be part of this. I don't know that they have any sort of, hang-ups in the way that Saudi Arabia does when they invest in things. But I'm going to imagine it's not great, especially when they're fully invested in a lot of AI stuff. But yeah, it seems like each of those will have a 15% share. 19.9% of the new app will be held by ByteDance itself, and 30.1% will be held by affiliates of existing ByteDance investors. So yeah, this is stupid, but it's, Trump's idea in the first place, if you can remember that far back, because Republicans and Trump wanted to do this back in his first term. But then he lost the election, and it became a thing that Biden ended up signing when the House and the Senate passed an eventual bill for that. And then Trump won office again and pushes over the finish line. But yeah, you can continue to not believe that any of your data is going to be safe with this new group any more than China might have been involved in some way. So yeah, congratulations to everybody.
That's happening. With that, we're now basically moving on to the entertainment portion of the show, and we've got a lot of stories for this one this week. The first one, big one being that Warner Brothers Discovery has officially rejected Paramount's acquisition offer,
Yeah.
which throws just a bunch of monkey wrenches into the plans of all the worst people you can think of.
Yeah. They still claim they're gonna keep pushing it. At least now Warner Brothers shareholders to approve that plan or anything. So yeah, especially because I think part of the money they were using for that was coming from the Saudis, which, not a great thing when you're involving ownership and all this, so Good riddance.
Then we move on to Peacock, who is introducing arrival ads for you to see when you get onto the home page.
Great. Stupid ads. So yeah, you get on the app, you pick your profile for this, and you'll see an ad taking up the rest of the screen. And it's like, of course, they would try to fit more ads in here so they can make even more money on you than they already were. I imagine the highest tier must not allow this, but maybe they would try to do the
Probably.
ad-free tier. This seems to be the new plan, and yeah, that's fun to see. More bullshit that I'm sure everybody else is going to do at some point as long as this. So yeah, there you
Of
go.
course. And then we found out that Sony is acquiring control of the Peanuts franchise in a $457 million deal.
Yeah, which is a little bit surprising. The Peanuts franchise is a huge one,
Oh,
much
yes.
like Garfield. Things that you don't think about 99% of the year, and then, Thanksgiving, Christmas come, and you watch Peanuts specials for those. But yeah, especially in Japan, Snoopy is huge over there.
Oh, yes.
So that's a fun thing. So yeah, they are entering into a definitive agreement with Canadian media company WildBrain to indirectly acquire all of their 41% stake held by WildBrain and Peanuts Holding Inc. or Holding LLC. Sony will pay $630 million Canadian to WildBrain for the 41% stake, or roughly $457 million US. Closing of the transaction is subject to certain closing conditions, regulatory approvals and all that. As a result of that, Sony Music Entertainment Japan and Sony Pictures Entertainment would, together with the 39% stake that Sony Music Entertainment Japan has in the company, will own 80% of the Peanuts Holding LLC, while the members of the family of Charles M. Schulz will continue to own the remaining 20%. Essentially, they will be in control, but in partnership with the Schulz estate. Yeah, and the management of the business will continue to be handled by Peanuts Worldwide, but Sony would be in control of everything. So, yeah, interesting move. But yeah, one of those properties that doesn't seem like it's big, but is secretly a very big property still. Maybe as a process, this will become more widely available, because I think Apple's had the rights to that stuff for the past Hanta. I don't know, maybe that'll change at some point here whenever that deal ends. So I guess that got recently renewed before this deal through 2030, so may still be a while yet. So there you go.
And this next one is kind of a big deal. The Oscars have announced that they will be moving from ABC to YouTube starting in 2029.
Yeah.
So they've been on ABC since like 1974.
And they still have the rights through 2028. But yeah, that'll be a multi-year deal that'll give YouTube the exclusive global rights to the Oscars, which is probably the bigger deal, the global rights. Make this exclusive to like YouTube Premium or anything. They're gonna let it be available to everybody, and that's probably a smart move. Because I don't know that the ABC really streamed it too much outside of their apps. But yeah, people being able to watch from around the world outside of any weird little rights restrictions things on YouTube. You'll be able to watch that pretty easily. And yeah, that is cool to see. For an event that is increasingly like very old-fashioned, this is a forward-looking thing for them.
Yeah, it is. But again, that's not going to be until 2029. So
Yeah.
still got a couple years before that happens. And then we got the surprising news this week that Bowen Yang will be leaving SNL after tonight's episode.
Which is surprising, but also
Kind of
why would
not.
that surprise? Yeah,
Yeah.
because he's really blown up in a lot of his outside of SNL stuff.
Yeah.
He's doing a lot of writing. He was in, the Wicked movies as a big deal, which this event is hosted by, or the this SNL is hosted by Ariana Grande with Cher. Boy, she is up there as well.
Oh yeah.
Still does well, but definitely, probably sounds more like her age now. But yeah, he's definitely got a bright future. Is probably one of their best cast members in quite a while.
And I think, like, if I had remembered correctly for a bunch of the stuff that he's been appearing in, he's kind of had to like get express written permission from Lorne Michaels himself to be able to do it. And I think he's ready to just finally cut the leash.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of what SNL these days allows. Because back in the day, you were stuck to SNL. Back in like the Dana Carvey, Mike Myers era, they had to leave to do anything on their own, which is why it was a big deal when those guys left the show. But otherwise, you were stuck doing, Wayne's World and all that. It's not that those were bad things, but if you wanted to do your own stuff, that was kind of the issue here. But yeah, he's been doing a lot of work and definitely seems ready to move on to bigger and better things, hopefully. We'll see where what kind of stuff he's got working on in the moment. But oh yeah, he's part of the Cat in the Hat upcoming thing. He's got some stuff going. That'll be cool.
Oh yeah. So yeah, that's happening. And moving on to AMC, who have announced that they are going to be working on a sequel show for Point Break.
Yeah. Which is an interesting property because they did a about 10 years ago. That kind of went nowhere, but this seems to be their next thing. Yeah, it's set in 2026, 35 years after the events of the original film that starred, Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves. Follow a dangerous heist crew with ties to the ex-president's gang featured in the film. This was a competitive situation to, win this project. So I guess there's a number of networks bid for this. But yeah, this comes from Dave Kalstein, who's worked on Butterfly, with Daniel Dae Kim and a number of other people. So that could be pretty cool. We'll see. Oh, I didn't know the original. The original is directed by Catherine Bigelow. Or was that the
I'm not sure.
way they write this? Maybe that's the case. So that seems a lot longer ago than I would have expected her to work on a movie. But no, yeah, that was her, I guess. Unless somebody else named Catherine Bigelow existed before and made big movies. I don't know. She's older than I think. I thought she was younger. Oh well. That could be neat. I don't know.
Could be.
Could be bad. I don't know.
And anyway, we then found out that Disney is now working on a live action Gaston movie because they have just completely run out of ideas.
Yeah, and especially basing it around a character that is not really supposed to be fleshed out. He's supposed to be a guy that's, an asshole and then gets tossed aside for obvious, then loses out in the end because he wants to stop the beast, but then finds out being an asshole is his fate. But yeah, it's being written by David Callahan, who worked on Godzilla and Kong: The New Empire and Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. No director yet or anything. But yeah, it's like
Why?
there would be other characters I would rather have a spin-off on. Like, how about the people who got their lives back in the mansion? I want to
Yeah,
go on them.
seriously.
See what interesting things maybe they did beforehand and maybe after.
Yeah. But no, we got to do it about the jackass villain.
Yeah.
Anyway, Moving on from there, we have One Battle After Another will be debuting on HBO Max December 19th, which means it's already out.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
That's gotten a lot of buzz, so that'd be cool to check out. With Leonardo DiCaprio, Sean Penn, Teyonah Taylor, Regina Hall, Benicio del Toro. So a lot of good actors there.
Yep.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah. And then we found out that Begonia will debut on Peacock on December 26th, so day after Christmas.
Yeah. See
And that's
what Emma
also
Stone
apparently.
and Yorgos Lanthimos has
Yeah.
in store if you didn't see it in theaters. I've heard this is an incredibly weird movie.
Oh, yes.
Even for the other stuff that Yorgos has made. So yeah, I'm curious to watch that.
And then we found out that the Muppet Show event special will be premiering on Disney Plus and ABC on February the 4th.
Yeah, that seems like it should be pretty cool. Let's see. Yeah, the Muppets return to the Muppet Theater to produce a variety show. Sabrina Carpenter's the featured guest star. So hopefully that leads to more of that, because that's the Muppet Show was great back in the day. And if they could do one that's a more regular thing, that would be pretty cool. Probably pretty easy to make more of that. But yeah, they got a little teaser, but it's just a date thing.
Yeah. And of course, because of the unfortunate news that happened this week, Rob Reiner's final film, Spinal Tap at Stonehenge, the final finale, was delayed.
They were going to time soon, but decided to put that on pause. Yeah, Bleecker Street acquired the U.S. distribution rights to the concert performance film directed by Reiner in October. It has been set yet. They initially set plans for an IMAX release next year, so I assume sometime next year, obviously. December 20th. Not gonna be, so we'll have to see, but yeah, that'll be a sad thing, but it'll be fun to see where this goes. So there you go.
And last but not least, we got a couple of trailers to go through here. We got an official trailer for His and Hers.
Yeah, this is a Netflix, I think a series. Or this might be a film. Yeah, January 8th it premieres on Netflix. Essentially features Tessa Thompson and John Bernthal as two people working on solving this murder case. Yeah, they're strange spouses. One's a cop, John Bernthal. Tessa Thompson's a news reporter. They're trying to solve this murder case in which they think the other person is a prime suspect. So that sounds like a neat premise. So I'll be curious to check that one out.
And we also got a teaser trailer for Steven Spielberg's upcoming film Disclosure Day, which I think is like the first movie he's put out in like 4 years.
Yeah, something like that. So yeah, this is an alien movie, but not necessarily in the obvious way. Sort of like in a version of Earth that there are aliens on the planet, but there's a conspiracy about it that they're some people are trying to expose, and it seems like that is gonna be part of the main plot. The premise here that they have written down is: if you found out we weren't alone, if someone showed you, proved it to you, would that frighten you? This summer, the truth belongs to 7 billion people. We're coming close to Disclosure Day. Yeah, they're trying to hold some big public spectacle that would unveil the existence of aliens on Earth to the world, and there's probably going to be things that happen to stop that. So yeah, that sounds neat.
And that trailer sure as hell was pretty damn cool, I'm not gonna lie. Like that's how you promote a film there.
Yeah, Emily Blunt, Joshua Connor's in this, who was just in the Wake Up Dead Man, Colin Firth, Eve Hewson, and yeah, Colman Domingo is in this. So Yeah, some good actors, and that'll be in theaters June 12th. So there
Yeah.
you go.
And last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Young Sherlock, which I think is a Guy Ritchie joint.
Yeah, Guy Ritchie's series. Features Sherlock Holmes before he's a detective.
Yeah, and before he, meets up with Watson
Yeah,
and all
he's
that.
hanging out with Moriarty.
Yeah.
To which somebody comments here, "Oh, so that's how they became enemies. It was the hat."
Yeah.
Because he finds the iconic hat in a shop, and Moriarty's like, "If you ever do that, I'm gonna kill you."
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I guess that's how. Is that kind of dumb? Not that they don't go for that in the trailer. They just hint at it. Sort of him in his early days as a student, and who gets wrapped up in these cases that he works on, and yeah, going through all that stuff.
Yeah. But with that, I do believe we have got ourselves a show. Folks, yes, we do. We have got ourselves a show. So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for in the show notes. We apparently have been getting more and more listeners fairly recently. So, if you're out there, drop us a line because we would love to hear from you. But if you're either way, if you're someone who's new with us or has been with us for, since the first show, if you like what you hear, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends and family, your coworkers, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone in between, because they may end up hating you, but there's a good 50-50 chance they'll like us, and that sounds like something that'll benefit everybody. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thank you, Chris, for joining me on this little spiel of bullshit that we do every week. We will be having a show hopefully next week, since Christmas is going to be on a Thursday, so we should be good for next week. For those of you who celebrate Christmas, like a lot of us do, please be safe out there. The spiel. Don't drink and drive, blah blah blah. You go easy on the eggnog. Et cetera, et cetera. You know how it goes. But yeah, join us next week for a post-Christmas edition of Let's Weekend. And until then, have a happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and we will see you all next week. Good night.